Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. We're closing in on New Year's Eve. We're closing in on the end of this 16-episode year-in-review series, looking back at the year in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Today's episode is looking back at pro wrestling in September 2021. A lot of things happened this month. This was the month that arguably AEW won, if you're into that type of competition. When it comes to organizations, they had All Out, a newsworthy pay-per-view to say the least, and then they had the stadium show, Arthur Ashe Stadium, Grand Slam. That's right, Grand Slam, featuring Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson. All types of other things happened this month with the rollout of NXT 2.0. Big E won the WWE Championship. Triple H had a cardiac event. All types of things happened this month. So we went a little bit long, and joining me this episode is returning guest Rich Kraich of VoicesOfWrestling.com. We're in almost 90 minutes. This is a good one. So hope you guys enjoy this. Again, a look back at Pro Wrestling 2021 in September. Enjoy. Well, as the year in review series keeps on trucking here, we look back at the month of September. Yeah, that's right. We're already in September in this series. And joining me is a past guest on this very show, Rich Kraich from Voices of Wrestling. And Rich, welcome back. We were talking beforehand. Everything is good. You got the holidays where everyone's working from home. It's cold there. It's cold here. It says 30 degrees there. It's 30 degrees or so here, freezing. All the good stuff. How things going?
Things are going pretty good. We're supposed to get our first actual snowfall of the year today, so we'll see if it actually ends up coming. But yeah, this is the first, I think, in recorded Chicago history that we went through an entire fall season without any like measurable snow. And I'm not complaining, for the record. I love it, but I just know it's coming at some point. So I'm kind of ready for it just to come because I don't want it in like May or April, which it probably will do that instead. So.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah, that's surprising. Yeah, we've had a couple here already, and we had freezing rain to begin Christmas, and we stupidly decided to drive to my in-laws' house, which about 10, it should be a 10-minute drive, and it turned into a 40-minute drive.
Oh.
And we're like going, I'm like, we should just go home. And my wife was hedging for whatever reason. And I'm like, literally like have no traction on the road. And it was one of those things where we were so far down the road, so to speak, that we're like, I guess we just keep going. And
There's no turning back now. Yeah.
I said afterwards, I'm like, we can just go to your parents a different time. That's fine. And I think we kind of came to that agreement that, you know, discretion is probably the better part of valor there in the future. Yeah. Winter weather, fun stuff. Yeah. All these West Coast people, these California types and all that stuff,
brats,
desert people. Yeah. No kidding. Complain about their, you know, global warming and all that stuff. We have to worry about this.
Yeah, though, unfortunately, they'll be underwater.
True, yeah. Florida, California, right.
So, right. I guess, like, I'll let them have it for now. But, because we'll have coastal property eventually. So
that's.
I'm just holding out that this property value is going to increase a lot where I'm at right now because it might be coastal pretty soon. So.
Yeah, no kidding.
What a great way to start the show.
I know. Talking about, global warming and everyone going underwater. I love it.
Right. Hey, COVID, that's still a thing. Yeah, that's
cool. So we're going to talk about the month of September, and this is a month
that was a fun month.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't really done this a lot with the guests. I had different guests on every time. What are kind of your views as we record this a couple days before the end of the year about the entire year of wrestling as a whole, not just this month, but kind of as you look back, what stands out for good, bad, and indifferent, I guess.
Yeah, I would say all in all, I want to say it was a good year because AEW, I think, really got on track in 2021 in a lot of ways. For the first time, it really felt like, okay, they belong here. They're going to stay. You know, this is something that's really not that I thought they were like on the edge of going out of business at any point in 2020 or whatever, but it just felt like they kind of got everything together in 2021. They obviously made huge signings. I thought they had some very good shows. They had I thought tremendous TV. I thought Dynamite was on a run of just like amazing, amazing television that we haven't seen in a very, very long time for major American wrestling. So AEW was probably the most positive of pretty much any company I could say. In wrestling. The problem was, I think there was so much kind of bad or disappointing stuff from every other company in the world, seemingly. Like, you know, WWE obviously continued their streak of just, I maybe even worse. 2020 was like, all right, well, it's during the pandemic. There's a lot of stuff going on. They're trying to kind of figure it out. I think 2021 was a very disappointing year for WWE, where it really felt like, man, where is this company going? Like, what are we doing? It's the effort's there. The talent is there, but it just feels like they're just rudderless, directionless, and just, it's very hard to watch WWE these days. It is very, very difficult to watch any of their major shows and especially their weekly TV. So I'd say a negative in terms of WWE. And I think New Japan, which, you know, kind of weathered the early storm of COVID, seemed to kind of, I don't know, they never really quite got on track. And I would kind of add all of Japan to that as well. And there's some stuff in Japan that was good. And there were some matches that really stood out, and there were some shows that really stood out. But obviously the specter of, you know, only clap crowds and just the seemingly never ending, you know, COVID pandemic, especially in Japan, it just kind of felt like, oh man, like, I don't know. It felt like a very down year in Japan overall, which might not be fair when you really look at the matches and stuff like that. But it just felt like a very depressing year. And really, I could say with a lot of other wrestling, it just kind of felt like a very depressing year. Impact felt like they kind of, you know, after 2020, and they seemed like they were on a pretty good trajectory. It just seemed 2021, they were kind of just, you know, without, especially post Kenny Omega, just felt like a really, really tough watch and a tough company. And then obviously Ring of Honor, you know, going on quote unquote hiatus / out of business / we don't know exactly what the future for them is. It just felt like we kind of ended 2021 on a pretty depressing note, where it's like, ah, COVID's still here. WWE is still kind of bad. Japan's still, you know, is going to have clap crowds. Ring of Honor is probably not coming back. Like, American Indies are fine, but still kind of struggling, you know, amidst the pandemic. So I'd say all in all, like, AEW had a very, very good year, but I think overall it's probably a disappointing, sad, you know, bad's probably not the right term, but kind of a disappointing year, I think, for wrestling overall in 2021.
Yeah, as I've been doing this series, you know, I kind of look, and there's been so much news and headlines and things that we, you know, decided that were news that may in the long run not have been. A lot of stuff that we forgot about, but there's just a lot of things that happen. But to your point, there's the two majors. You have WWE, which from a financial standpoint is just, you know, head and shoulders times a billion above everyone else, just because the revenue and just the massive lead that they have. However, creatively, they don't scratch the itch for a lot of fans like they used to. AEW is coming on strong. However, I think there's obviously some financial realities with them, that they're not at that level yet, not that mainstream, the Coke Pepsi brand name type level yet, as WWE is, for better or worse. And I also think they have some roster things to figure out as well. I think they have a lot. There's I think in the entire wrestling space, there's so much talent out there that can really go. You could make a very, very strong third company easily, and have it be on a cable network and think doing well if they had the creative behind it. It's just a question of having a network really want to do that. And that's, you know, so many people saying that, you know, wrestling's so hot, and wrestling it's not really hot. I think it's more interesting because of AEW, but I think these other organizations, you know, if it was really hot, they'd have a TV deal, like a better one by now. And it just isn't that way. And I think all these other groups have their niche fans, but what you really need to kind of succeed and make money, which is the whole point of this for so many, obviously, is you got to have something that's different and interesting. And that's why, you know, I've been talking about this whole series. GCW is so fascinating. They have no TV product, but they have this real hardcore fan base that's just kind of growing and growing, but they just do pay-per-views only, you know, and there's no, there's no like real big push for a TV product, where all these other groups have TV. We talked about Ring of Honor, backed by Sinclair Broadcasting, and they had just no buzz at all. And you saw what happened to them. So I'm fascinated to see what the year ahead brings. I think there's going to be, I've said this before, kind of a reckoning for some of them. Like, are we making money and what are we doing here? Ring of Honor took that first step towards that. We still don't know if they're officially going to come back. If they do, what makes them different than all these groups? And I think that's what they're going to have to kind of look at themselves in the mirror and say, how do we really make an impact, so to speak, on the business, and why are people watching our product? And is our niche fans enough? Are we making money? Are the wrestlers satisfied? You know, how does that work? I think that's going to be, to me, that's kind of like the biggest thing in 22, looking ahead. That's what's up top of mind for me.
Yeah, no, and that's something I brought up on my podcast a lot over the last year, is, you know, especially we have a Patreon component as well. And a lot, you know, I do Q&As pretty regularly. Just about once a month, I'll do a Q&A. And most people ask, what can Impact or Ring of Honor or whoever, like, insert, you know, indie, what can they do to kind of, you know, break out a little bit or get bigger? And I always say, like, you need to figure out what you are. Like, what are you providing to the wrestling fan base? What are you providing that's going to make people want to watch you? And I think we've seen, unfortunately, in 2021, you know, for better or for worse, AEW has kind of filled the niche of like, okay, hey, are you a wrestling fan who likes good in-ring wrestling and like high fly, you know, and they got that. And they, you know, if you're a wrestling fan who, you know, likes the in-ring product or whatever, you're getting a lot of what you want out of AEW. And that's really never happened in a major American wrestling pretty much since WCW. And even then, like I would argue, you know, 97, 98, 99 WCW kind of got away from that. But like from that point forward, we haven't had like, you know, a major American company that said, hey, we're just like, you know, we're really great in ring. Like that's what we have. That's what our component is. That's what really stands out. And that's what, you know, allowed a company like a Ring of Honor to really become what it was in the early 2000s to say, hey, look, you know, we have great wrestling. You know, WWE has sports entertainment and that sort of stuff. We have wrestling, you know, and ECW used to use that a little bit as well and to say, hey, we're the counterculture of us is that we're, you know, we present professional wrestling. They present whatever they present. We present professional wrestling. Well, they have AEW that says, no, we present professional wrestling. You know what I mean? Like that, we have that. So it leaves all these other companies in a weird spot. It leaves like Impact and Ring of Honor and all those secondary companies in a weird spot because they have always kind of been like, hey, we're like independent professional wrestling. And it's like, well, yeah, but we're getting like major American professional wrestling from a company that I can watch every single week on TNT and you know, this year TBS or whatever. So you now have to figure out what you do that's special, what you do that's unique, and just being like Impact Wrestling. Like there's nothing, you know, and we've seen that in the latest, you know, ratings coming out for Impact is that, I mean, they have like 70,000 people watching their weekly show because it's just, it doesn't fill any niche. It fills the niche of, I'm an Impact Wrestling fan, but how do you grow from there? How do you expand from there? And we saw Ring of Honor that basically said, hey, our niche is that we're Ring of Honor. And we saw that that really isn't going to do it. You know, and that's, it's ultimately going to maybe be their demise is that they just can't figure out what their niche is and what they do that's special. And that's why you bring up like a GCW because they are clear in what they are doing. Hey, you know, we're not AEW, we're not WWE, we're GCW. We're presenting something completely different than what those two are. And you're finding that their fan base is growing from that same standpoint. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting in 2022 to see what these independent companies or these secondary companies do to kind of make themselves stand out because, yeah, the stars are there. There's like people that are out there and there's free agents or whatever. But how do you present your TV? How do you present your wrestling product to make it so that people, you know, with a finite amount of time say, you know what? Yeah, I am going to watch Impact for, you know, an hour every single week. Or yeah, I'm going to watch, you know, X for 2 hours every week. Or I'm going to order your pay-per-view on the weekend. And right now, I just think a lot of companies are struggling to figure out what that is besides, hey, here we are presenting wrestling. I just don't know if that's enough right now.
Yep. Well, let's go to one of the promotions we just talked about, obviously AEW. And I think they won the month in terms of, I know they won the month in terms of like interest, big news, things like that, because it began, I didn't really begin with All Out, but this was kind of the biggest news, the news item of the month. This event debuts and all this did about 200,000 buys. On pay-per-view, you were actually in the crowd, in the audience for this show. And this was, you know, this was a show that was filled with debuts, awesome matches, moments, everything like that. It was pretty goddamn near perfect, I think, in a lot of ways. At the end, obviously, the moment that people remember, Adam Cole making his debut at the show, coming out at the very end as part of kind of the big show closing angle after Omega beat Christian, and we thought he was going to be a babyface coming out to confront the Elite, and then decides to join them instead. And then several minutes later, Bryan Danielson coming out to just a huge ovation. Both guys did, to be honest, and just a show closing angle. This was unbelievable. I kind of have like goosebumps thinking about now just of how happy, elated, and excited people were. And I think that's the thing I get most envious about, jealous about, and nostalgic about looking back at the Attitude Era, which we lived through, was how excited fans were in the stands and how excited that made you feel at home. And this moment was it. You know, you had the Punk debut at the United Center the month before, and fans, that was one of the best moments, I think, of all time in pro wrestling, just the way it, just everything about it. We talked about that last episode, but this was pretty great. And you were there. What do you remember about those last closing minutes of it All Out?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, to kind of, you know, the entire show, and you mentioned it there, like pretty damn near perfect. And we did an instant reaction immediately following that. I did a podcast coming home from the event, and I had no voice. I had no business doing like a 2-hour podcast immediately after the event, but I did anyway. And we did a live show, and we had the most people ever listen to our live show. We had the most people subscribe to our Patreon ever. Like, the review had our most I mean, it was like you said, it people felt that this was something special. The crowd acted like it was something special. The wrestlers acted like it was something special. Fans had it being something special. I mean, this was this one-of-a-kind moment. And, you know, and I went on record immediately after that and said, this is, like, one of the greatest pay-per-views ever. Like, this is, you know, just in terms of in-ring debuts, newsworthiness, like, crowd reactions, like, everything just kind of came together to make this just incredible, special, special moment. I mean, clear show of the year contender for me. And again, I'm still thinking it's one of the greatest pay-per-views ever. And yeah, those final few moments were just like, I mean, it was, you almost got exhausted. It was, I was leaving the building. You were just like, oh my God. Like, it was, yeah. Like, you're thinking, man, they just went through like 5 months of thing. They could have stretched this stuff out for like 5 months. And they just went boom, 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 boom. But you know, I liked that they did that. It just created such a buzz and such a monumental moment that I was just so happy to be there for, that you're thinking, man, they debuted Cole. You know, CM Punk makes his return to the ring after 7 years. Brian Danielson debuts and Adam Cole debuts all in the same show. You didn't have to. I mean, again, you could have stretched that out for so many more months, but I'm so glad they didn't, because it just made it that much more special. And then, you know, kind of lost in all that is Lucha Brothers versus Bucks, which honestly might be my match of the year. I mean, one of the greatest matches I've ever seen live. Just a lot of really, really great stuff on there. I go back and I remember that Minoru Suzuki came out on that show. And it's like, I completely forgot that Minoru Suzuki was there. Yep. You know, because so many other things happened on that show that, like, it was some weird thing where, as you're recapping the show, you're like, oh, yeah, right. Like, 2.5 hours ago, Minoru freaking Suzuki came out and, like, confronted Jon Moxley. It was just, like, another level show. And I think it was really AEW showing out, like, hey, we have arrived. This is what we're able to do. And we're a player for sure. Like, not that they weren't a player before this, but this was really just like, all right, yeah, these guys – this is something special. This company is something special, and it's here for the long haul. But yeah, it's just those final few moments, just bang, 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 one after the other. It's just crazy, crazy in the building. And a monumental moment, a moment I will never forget ever. And like you said, you know, the CM Punk thing happened a month prior. I was also lucky enough to be there live too. So I had a very blessed August and September, all thanks to AEW and some of these big names coming back. But yeah, just a really, really cool moment. Just really fun atmosphere to be there live. And just the buzz was palpable.
Yeah. So at this show, some of the things that we forgot about, Ruby Soho made her debut on the show.
That's right.
Remember that? Yeah, she won.
I do remember that. Yeah, in a great match, like a really, really fun match too. That was awesome.
Yeah, the Casino Women's Battle Royale. She came out as the ace, and or the Joker rather. And yeah, she ended up winning the thing and earning a title shot. You mentioned the Lucha Brothers winning the tag team titles from the Young Bucks in a great cage match. Omega defeating Christian. In the main event, the Butcher returned from injury on the pre-show. Suzuki, Minoru Suzuki, confronting Jon Moxley after he beat Satoshi Kojima. And yeah, CM Punk making his in-ring debut, or his return in-ring debut for AEW, his return after, 8 years, picking up a win over Darby Allin. That was a fun moment, a match, long tights Punk we haven't seen before. It was just a fun moment. And yeah, afterwards we learned that AEW is moving their Full Gear date, which we had known is going to happen for a while due to some conflicts in schedule. And then also the following Wednesday, Jon Moxley versus Minoru Suzuki is going to be set for the Jon Moxley homecoming edition, essentially, of AEW Dynamite. That was, it was a happening, as Gorilla Monsoon said, unbelievable. And we'll see what they can do to top that. But it's hard, you know, when you're able to debut Adam Cole and Brian Danielson within a few minutes of each other and have it make sense on the same show. You have CM Punk come back to the ring for the first time in a decade. It's going to be hard to top that, you know?
Well, and the embarrassment of riches too, to just say, hey, we're bringing in Adam Cole. Fans are going to go nuts for him. And then we're just going to turn him heel right away just because we can, because we have Brian Danielson coming out immediately afterwards. Like, you know, like the idea that, like, man, you bring in Adam Cole and then, like, yeah, the crowd goes absolutely nuts because they're thinking, oh crap, Adam Cole's here. That's awesome. And he's going to beat up the Elite. And they're like, nah, we can turn him heel immediately. We're fine. Like, you know, we don't need him. You know, we have another guy that's a bigger star coming out in a few moments. And it's just, yeah, that embarrassment of riches was just definitely on site there with AEW, and saying, hey, look, if you're going to let all these guys go, these talented guys, you know, if you have no need for them, then fine. You know, we'll take them and we'll maximize them and use them in the best way possible. And it seemed very clear on that day that they were going to, you know, maximize those recent WWE releases and make the most out of them.
So let's go to this other this first chunk of events and happenings from AEW. CM Punk announces official retirement from mixed martial arts because he's obviously in AEW. He also said AJ Lee, no plans for her to return to the ring due to injuries. And he said that WWE backstage with Renee Young, Renee Paquette, was actually his gateway to him returning. Got some of the wheels spinning in his head and thinking about coming back. Pac versus Andrade, that was supposed to be on the show as well and All Out. And it was off the show due to what they said were travel issues, and it was actually rescheduled for the next week's Rampage. Again, just an embarrassment of riches that that match was off the card, which bums the people out, but you were going to get see it on free TV, essentially, like a week later. Max Caster.
Yeah, and you didn't even need it. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't even need it, and then you forgot that was even supposed to be on it, and then you're like, yeah, you didn't, you know, who cares? Then we got it. Like I said, you can hold some stuff off, and that was, you know, it was obviously due to travel issues and whatnot, but it, even honestly, if it wasn't for travel issues, that was probably a match that probably made more sense, getting a little bit more time or getting, you know, highlighted on Rampage, less, you know, other than being like the seventh match, you know, and All Out. That's all really, really good. I mean, it'd have been fine. I mean, I wouldn't have hated seeing that live, but I was fine with that.
Yeah. Max Caster and Anna Jay returned, both for different reasons. More Jericho Cruz wrestlers were announced. Lance Archer, Powerhouse Hobbs, Jake Roberts, Anna Jay, Gun Club, and Wheeler Yuta. Britt Baker extended her contract with AEW. Lee Moriarty signed a deal with AEW, which is provided to him or given to him on AEW Dark Elevation. AEW Grand Slam Dynamite Rampage. We'll talk about this in a second. This was obviously September, a huge month for AEW, but making their stadium debut, Arthur Ashe Stadium, sold out place, just a really fun environment. Kenny Omega, Bryan Danielson went to a 30-minute draw. We'll talk about that in a minute. CM Punk defeating Powerhouse Hobbs. That was on his first live or free TV show, rather, in, like, again, 8 years. Homicide appeared at the very end. Tony Khan said he was talking to Leah Rush about a return. They made their debut at Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida for Dark. Rosario Dawson appeared on an episode of Dynamite, on the same episode that Cody Rhodes appeared. They go Big Show tie in there. And Chavo Guerrero was written off TV in the Andrade angle as he was gone. And then he was expected to return as he was helping out with Young Rock Season 2. I mean, out of that, obviously, Grand Slam Dynamite and Rampage, that was another big moment. This is a huge September for AEW.
Yeah, they really showed out in September and really kind of, and it's something that's made, you know, the ratings as of late a little disappointing, is because September felt like this real turning point and like, okay, this company is really competing on like the major, major league stage. And they still kind of are to an extent, but it has made the ratings pattern, especially in December, a little disappointing, because you're like, oh man, they really, like, you really thought that that was the turning point. And the ratings were reflecting that too. The ratings, the buys, everything was reflecting that this is a company that is on the rise and really, you know, can compete in the demo and can compete in maybe even slowly compete in overall viewers. And that obviously has not shown through in December. And we'll see, obviously, in 2022 with the move to TBS and the West Coast time getting all kind of fixed and corrected or whatever. But still, it felt like with September, they really said, like, OK, we're arriving and we're not going anywhere. And it was just a hell of a month for them. And that Dynamite Grand Slam. What a match. I mean, that another, you know, match of the year contender out of AEW in September. I mean, that's just for people that, I mean, I know there were multiple people who went to both of those shows live, and it's just like, man, you went to some incredible things live. And it was also, what was important about that match more than anything is it showed that Bryan Danielson is, you know, even though there wasn't much doubt that he was going to be good, it showed that, like, oh, this guy's gonna be great. Like, this guy is such a tremendous wrestler. And it did make you a little disappointed that it felt like he had maybe, you know, for better or for worse, left a little in the tank in WWE, realizing, yeah, I don't really have to, you know, go out here and have these incredible, amazing matches. But that when given the opportunity to be able to return to quote unquote Bryan Danielson and leave Daniel Bryan behind, like, you saw, oh yeah, this guy is, like, he hasn't missed a beat. And he went out there and had just an incredible, incredible match. Arguably, I'm really in between Lucha Brothers and Bucks, and this match is my match of the year for 2021. I'm probably going to rewatch both of them before the end of the year to kind of figure it out. But just an awesome atmosphere and a tremendous, tremendous match.
Yeah, it was a moment. It was just an absolute moment. And you kind of knew, at least I kind of thought going in, like, a draw would make sense or some sort of, like, way, because you didn't want to really, you know, necessarily beat either guy. But it just, everything just made sense, and it was a satisfying draw, I guess. I'm not a big fan of draws a lot, but this just, it just worked. And again, it just, the atmosphere made such a moment, just the, you know, right before they locked up, is again, it was the showing out and like the embarrassment of Richards, like, we can do this and we can do this on free TV. We don't have to put it, wait till full gear or wait till, you know, and really just slow play this out. Like, no, we're going to do this now, and this is how we're going to do it. And to have the confidence in doing it, where it's like, we don't have to provide a winner because we've earned that much goodwill with our fan base that we're able to do this. I talked about this in August with the United Center announcement. The fact that if this was a different company, WB, whoever, they would not be able to resist and resist saying that CM Punk was going to be there. But AEW, without saying a word, knowing that they're who their fan base is and having the confidence of being like, we're not going to screw these people over because, you know, realistically we can, or else we're going to burn them. They just simply announced the first dance in arena, and they let everything, they let a single rumor just take hold, and they sold out that place. And having that confidence, I think that's going to be important for them in 2022, is really, really never forgetting that you've built up that cachet of goodwill. Don't burn it. And I don't think they will. You never know, because this is what their third year, give or take, that they're starting in. Every promoter is going to make mistakes. You talked about kind of ratings patterns and things like that, and we'll see. But again, for that 2 month stretch, having that cachet built up was pretty impressive. And again, they were able to put Omega Dance in on free TV for a half hour and confident in doing that and having a draw. That's a good indication, I think, for the future.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned that cachet of not burning your audience. And I think the first dance was obviously the one of the biggest moments in that company, like you said, of just saying, no, trust us. We know what you want. We know what you're looking for, and we're going to deliver it. Just buy the tickets, watch the show. You know, we're going to do it for you. And they have done that so far. I mean, with the exception of maybe the exploding, you know, ring thing or whatever, and a few little things here and there, like, for the most part, AEW has kind of said, hey, we know what you guys want and what you're expecting, and we're going to give you, you know, what you're expecting and give you what you want. And it's an important thing, because I think so many wrestling fans have grown up, and especially American wrestling fans have grown up in an era, you know, pretty much over the last 20 years, with a company that says, screw you, you know, we don't care what you want or what you think, we're going to do the opposite. Or in some cases, like, do the opposite because they think that you think what's going to happen. And it's like, no, don't do that. Just do what's predictable. Sometimes what's predictable is what's best. And that's, you know, in a lot of times, in many other areas of WWF and in many other areas of territorial wrestling, like, what was predictable was more times than not the right move to make. And sometimes it's just like, yeah, just do what's predictable. You know, we all kind of worked ourselves into a shoot with, like, I don't know, is Hangman going to actually win the title this time? And it's like, yeah, of course he is. Like, come on, like, they're not going to screw you over again. And then they didn't. And it was just like, oh yeah, why would they do that? Of course they would just have him win. So it's a very delicate balance that they're going to have to go through. And they're going to do something sometime that's going to make people upset. And they're going to do something sometime that's going to make a lot of people question them. But yeah, they've built up, you know, 3 years of cachet that, you know, no other company, no other major American company has done, you know, really in many, many years. I mean, Impact couldn't, you know, or in the early TNA days, couldn't help themselves. I mean, they were, you know, doing wild, you know, screw job stuff, like, right off the bat, and pretty much just saying, we don't care what you want. Yeah. We're going to do whatever we want. So they kind of ruined that cachet very, very quickly. And AEW, like you said, 3 years in, really hasn't done that. And I think that's made it very important. It's given the audience a lot of confidence that you're going to buy a ticket to a show and you're going to get pretty much exactly what you want out of a Dynamite, out of a Rampage, or out of a pay-per-view. And that's important. That it really, really is important. And we really underrate just how important that is.
Let's go over the second chunk, and I'll kick it over to you for thoughts. AEW announced the Owen Cup tournament with Owen Hart merchandise, and basically a deal with the Owen Hart Foundation. Definitely a interesting relationship there. We're kind of slowly still getting some details about the Owen Cup tournament, but essentially AEW really leaning into wrestling history and this figure that, you know, for so many people is so important, Owen Hart and AEW and that foundation being aligned. There's a rotating announced team. Announced essentially set for Rampage instead of the same four guys. They're going to rotate people in and out. There was initially some talk that Ricky Starks was going to be the fixture on the show, the kind of the fourth announced seat, but that was determined that was not going to be the case, what have you. But they really, you know, they love having multi-person announced teams, and that was going to be the case on Rampage going forward. Full Gear was going to be announced as coming to Minnesota versus St. Louis, due to those scheduling issues. Anthony Green, Kurt Stallion, and Ally Catch made their AEW debuts on Dark. Ryo Mizunami announced that she was going to be returning to the United States for a stint to return to AEW. The official date for Dynamite's move to TBS was announced for January 5th, and also that Rampage was going to stay on TNT versus move to TBS, as that was originally discussed. AEW signed Satnam Singh, who was the first Indian-born drafted NBA player. The TBS title was announced. This was something that was talked about, that there was some new, potentially the Trios title, which has been talked about forever and hoped for forever, by AEW going a different direction, announcing a secondary women's title. Now the TBS title and details about that were set to be released. The John Huber Legacy Foundation was announced. Leo Rush signed with AEW after, again, mentioned that Tony Khan was talking to him about signing and coming out of retirement. And then Sammy Guevara defeated Miro for the TNT title. And then like minutes after, during the Roads to the Top, during a commercial segment, Bobby Fish challenged Sammy Guevara for the title, and learned a little bit later on that he signed a deal with AEW. So again, just these kind of these small other pieces of something seems to be always happening in AEW, new signings and movement and all these things. So yeah, just a few minutes after the title, Sammy Guevara's open challenge would begin, and he would challenge against a former NXT star and Bobby Fish. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, so I'll start with Bobby Fish. I think, you know, something that AEW has done really, really well, and something I've enjoyed about their product, is they're really good at having like mid-card secondary guys that are just like great wrestlers, just good workers. And Bobby Fish is probably one of the top guys in that you can mention in that, where you don't really ever expect him to get a push. You don't want him to get a push. He probably doesn't want a push. They probably told him, hey, we're not going to really give you a push, but like, just go out there and like do your thing. Wrestle. Be a good wrestler, be a good veteran hand, and yeah, you're there to, you know, occasionally take pinfalls, you're there to occasionally get wins, but you're essentially just like a mid-card like good worker. And that's something that like Major American Wrestling has kind of lost for a lot of years. I mean, I likened, you know, the current AEW roster a lot to like WCW in 1992, where it's like you can watch an episode of Saturday Night or whatever, and it's like you're just gonna have like in the middle of a card, you're just gonna have like Dustin Rhodes versus Steve Austin, and they're just gonna wrestle for 15 minutes, and it's gonna be good. It's like there's not really a ton at stake. Maybe there's a secondary title at stake, but they just go out there and they just wrestle for 15 minutes because they're just great wrestlers. It's, you know, it's something that we've really kind of lost in Major American Wrestling, just like the mid-card guys that just go out there and wrestle. And it's a very, very WCW thing. It's a very, you know, throwback to that era, but it's something that we've kind of lost for a bit. And it's been funny to watch fans kind of react to these sort of signings, and AEW has a couple of these guys, and it's like, well, why, you know, what's the point of signing Bobby Fish? What are you going to do with the Bobby Fish? And it's like, just have him wrestle. You know, you don't have to have any grandiose plans for this guy. You could just be, you know, a guy on your roster that, you know, you can put in a tag match or you can put in a singles match and have him go out there for 10 to 15 minutes and wrestle. And that's a really valuable asset to have on a roster. And I think AEW has been smart, you know, to capitalize on some of those. But some of the other ones that you mentioned there, the two that really, you know, stand out is the Owen Cup and the John Huber Legacy Foundation. Again, just kind of goodwill towards fans and doing the right thing is something that AEW has tried in their 3 years of really trying to do pretty extensively. And I think these are two great, you know, things of John Huber, obviously, you know, keeping his legacy alive and supporting him through everything. And we've heard from multiple guys. We've heard from CM Punk. We've heard from Bryan Danielson. We've heard from many other people that said the way that they treated him and his family, you know, during this, keeping, you know, his sickness, you know, to themselves, not revealing anything, not trying to get any points by saying, hey, you know, we're doing this for him, we're doing that for him, you know, unfortunately led a lot of people to be completely surprised when they heard that he passed away. But it was in some way, a lot of wrestlers and a lot of the family and a lot of people said, okay, that was probably the right thing to do. That if this guy didn't want this to be public and didn't want, you know, this to be something that was a big deal, that, you know, they kept it quiet and they kind of just said, hey, if that's what your wishes are, we'll live with your wishes. We'll keep you under contract. We'll do whatever you need to do. But like, yeah, we won't do anything more than that. I think really speaks to AEW's, you know, fan and wrestler service. And yeah, we've heard from multiple people how important that was. And I think that stands to the Owen Cup as well. I mean, I'm really, really excited to see what they do with the Owen Cup. I'm really excited to see what the rollout of that is. And I think it's really cool to get more people aware, you know, of Owen Hart, how great Owen Hart was. And it just bookended right off of the Dark Side of the Ring, which I know we're going to talk about here in a little bit, Dark Side of the Ring. But I thought the Owen was probably my favorite Dark Side that they've ever done, because I'm going in expecting this horrible, tragic, awful, oh my God, here's Owen Hart, you know, and his death and, the, you know, how terrible it all was. And you come away from that Dark Side saying, you know what, that family, you think that they're bitter and emboldened and they're annoyed and angry or whatever, and they're just the opposite. You know what I mean? And they're completely opposite. And it was so cool to to see, you know, them link up with AEW and say, yeah, you know what, let's honor his legacy. Let's talk about Owen Hart. Let's make his name, you know, well-known among wrestling fans. And yeah, he died a tragedy, but we can, you know, we can do so much, you know, to help, you know, make people aware of the impact that he's had and the impact that he's had, you know, in his death as well, and the foundation and charities and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, just another two, you know, great wins from AEW there of just doing fan and wrestler service, with Owen and Huber. And then one thing I did want to point out, and then we can move on there. The Singh signing as well was a really, really cool signing that went really under the radar. And I don't know what they're going to get out of this guy. I have no idea what skills he has or whatever, but he's a big deal. I mean, he, like you said, the first, you know, Indian player drafted in the NBA. He had a documentary about him a couple years ago. The name escapes me right now, what the documentary was, but it's a very, very good documentary about him, you know, getting drafted and acclimating to America and trying to get into the NBA. But like, if they can get something out of this guy and they can, you know, make this guy into something, I mean, this is, you're talking about a 7-foot Indian superstar. I mean, that's, that can go a long way. That can really be something big. And yeah, hell, if it doesn't work and he doesn't acclimate and he gets sick of wrestling or whatever, then yeah, it's nothing. But I was kind of surprised at how little I heard about that signing when it happened. And another fun, you know, kind of under the radar thing from AEW.
Let's flip to WWE's month, and not a ton of like big news here. Actually, there were a few things, I guess. You know, to me, kind of the biggest news of the month, obviously, was Big E cashing in the Money in the Bank briefcase and winning the WWE title on Raw from Bobby Lashley. And I think it was interesting because I think it was on Sunday the news came out that he essentially said on Twitter that, you know, he was cashing in. So it wasn't one of these like surprise deals. It was more of a, hey, I'm coming for you type thing. And we knew it was going to happen. And I think everyone kind of knew what the end was going to be, obviously thinking, okay, maybe how is WWE going to screw this up or screw this guy over? But in the end, it didn't. He cashed in the briefcase. It was a great moment. I think kind of a coronation moment for him. Someone that a lot of fans had hoped that was going to get a chance to win the title. He's the right guy, I think, for the right moment. As we record this today, he is still champion. And, you know, maybe they haven't, how they've kind of booked him, I think, you know, I think that's a perpetual like frustration fans have with how they put certain guys over. They've had no problems with Roman Reigns, and I think maybe they could hopefully do the same with Bobby Lashley and build up two big champions. How about that, right? But they seem to know I can do that with one guy being a heel. However, Big E, yeah, winning the title, everyone seemed to be really happy about it. And I don't know, you know, been a huge business mover, but I think it was a real good feel-good moment for the company and for him.
It definitely was. Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword, and that tends to be a lot of times anytime WWE does something well, is that it's also like it was equal parts disappointing and like rewarding. I mean, it's rewarding because Big E has deserved this for a very long time. And I'm not one to usually, you know, use the deserve thing, you know, with wrestling. Like, you know, you a lot of times earn stuff. And you know, these days we kind of say, oh, this guy deserves this, or this woman deserves this, or this person deserves this. But Big E has earned that for years. I mean, I've been on record many, many times saying that this guy, 20 years down the line, we're going to look at this career and say, why did they not do more with Big E? Like, what else did you need out of this guy? Like, charismatic as hell, good body, great wrestler, just good on promo, good Twitter personality, like a guy you could definitely use in publicity. Like, he had everything, the entire package that you could possibly want, you got from Big E. And they just, it took him like, what, 8 years to finally say, all right, fine, here's the title, here you go. And it's just like, what are you guys doing? Like, come on. It long held that he will be one of the biggest disappointments that this company has ever had. And nothing to him. It's not a result of him whatsoever. It's absolutely a result of that company. But with that said, like, they give him this moment, it's really cool and it's awesome. And he's very well deserving, and he definitely earned that moment. But at the same time, you're like, why did you not build this up? Like, why are we, you know, 24-hour build for this big time moment? I mean, you could have really got him on this trajectory. You could have really said, okay, you know, I'm cashing in at this pay-per-view, I'm cashing in at this Raw, and make it a couple months down the line, make it a couple weeks down the line, even if that, I mean, make it really build up, let us anticipate it. Let us feel that the moment's coming and get excited about it. Let him get some wins. Let him really feel like that momentum is building. Instead, it just kind of felt out of nowhere. And yeah, it was a cool moment in, you know, a vacuum, but I think the fact that they didn't build it up enough and that they didn't really kind of say, hey, this guy's ascending and this guy's here and this guy's ready, has kind of made the whole title reign feel like it is right now, because we're now what, 2 months into this title reign, and like, yeah, he's still the champion, and yeah, he's still doing it, but it doesn't feel like this culmination of Big E's career. It just kind of feels like he got the title and now he has the title, And I'm ultimately a little disappointed that they didn't do enough to kind of build him up and get him ready for this moment, because I think you really could have made this that much more special and not make it just feel like this one real cool moment on one Raw, and instead make it feel like it was this big moment. And now this guy has arrived and this guy's our next star. Instead, he just feels like a guy who, you know, taking the turn with the title, and he deserves better than that. So I'm a little disappointed in how they built that up. The win itself was great, and the aftermath was awesome. But yeah, I just think they could have done so much more with it instead of just kind of, it felt very, I don't know, forced, fly by night. I don't know the correct terminology, but it, yeah, 24-hour build for this. He deserved a lot better than that.
Yeah, they had a couple kind of fly by night announcements. They had a three-way. There was a Reigns, Lashley, Big E three-way that they basically decided that day to do for an episode of Raw. That also happened this month. And yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to, and something that, you know, Dave and Brian have said on our website before, and I'm sure, you know, you guys have said your podcast and whatever, but they just don't care about building up good guys, baby faces. They just, they're like allergic to it, adverse. And it's such a strange thing, because people want things to root for. And
yeah,
while, you know, I think I brought this up last episode, there's so much of the, again, for people that watch TV, you know, the troubled hero, or the person you're not supposed to root for, but you end up the Walter White types, the flawed hero, you know, all these types of stuff, like that's been done so often that people want things to root for. It's why people go to movies. That's why, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home was it's trying to be like the biggest movie of all time, box office wise. People like heroes. It's not Green Goblin, No Way Home, or Venom. It's people want things to root for. That's what we look for in our pop culture, because life in general, it's hard to root for things. Look at the pandemic we're in, and it's fun to be optimistic and be happy for other people. And I think a lot of people were happy for him. But to your point, if they had said, "Look, we're gonna have this culminate at the Royal Rumble or a WrestleMania," and we're like, "We think this guy can be it." And that's a great point you made earlier, because I remember about them taking so long. I remember when he first came up, or when he was in developmental, and they were talking. I thought I heard like a Rock comparison somewhere, that he's super charismatic. That's what it was. It was like, he's as charismatic as the Rock is, and he just has to get the opportunity to show it. And it took him almost a decade to figure it out. And he has that charisma. He has the whole package. And I think it just comes down to, everything's quick. Quick things. Let's get a buzz on social before anything else. We know we're going to get our 1.8 to 2 million viewers per episode for Raw. And they just don't know how to build people that other people root for. It's a systematic failure in the company. And it starts with the top, you know. That's just, I think everyone kind of knows that.
Yeah, we always say that they're in the moment creation business, not in the star making business. Yeah. And that's what they did. They created a moment. You got a moment on Raw when Big E cashed, but it's so, I mean, this was the biggest layup in history of like a star creation moment. I mean, get a whiteboard and say Big E wins our title and he's our next star. And then you kind of book from there. Okay, when are we going to do it? Let's do it in, like you said, Royal Rumble. Okay, cool. I mean, hell, have him call a shot. Have him say, you know what, whoever's the champion at the Royal Rumble, I'm facing you and I'm winning that title. And then just have him win for 3 months, you know, like, and everybody will know it's coming. And that's fine. Like we said, sometimes it's okay. Sometimes the predictable is the best story. You know, the first dance, we're not going to tell you what's going to happen, but you all know what's going to happen. You know, you could have done that with the Royal Rumble and say, hey, you know, Big E said he's going to cash in. He's winning all these matches. He's got the momentum. Maybe we'll screw you over because we're WWE, but like that makes kind of the fun part of the story is that, you know, hey, are they actually going to do this with Big E? Are they actually going to give him that title? And then he just wins the title. And yeah, it's something that could have been done so easy and so simple. And instead you have him like, you know, in SummerSlam, he's just, you know, he's irrelevant. And then, you know, a month later, he's the champion. It's creating a moment. It's creating a buzz. It's creating social media traffic, but it's not creating stars. And it's something that's been, like you said, an epidemic in this company for years now. And I don't know why. It seems so simple. And this company used to be so good at making stars. It's unbelievable. Now there's a whole generation of fans now that probably don't believe when we say this, but like when they wanted to make stars, they just did, and they made stars and they were able to do it. And now they just seem, like you said, they're just adverse to it. They just want what's next, what's next, what's next week. It's all about what's next week. And not let's think a month down the line. Let's think 2 months down the line. Let's think years down the line. They just don't do that anymore. They're just not in that business anymore.
Yeah, the proof that they did is they're a publicly traded company worth, you know, well over $1 billion or whatever. It's that ride through the Attitude Era, that's they created so many stars, they were able to take the company public. I think that's like the biggest indication of what they used to be able to do that was so good. And, you know, perhaps in the end, that was the downfall of them being able to make stars. Like, oh, look, we're super rich and we don't need to do this because we have staying power. You know, I don't know.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So let's go over the first chunk of this month for WWE in September. They had the trademark for the Queen's Crown tournament was filed. So this was a rumor that was talked about throughout the year. They were going to announce this King of the Ring kind of men's tournament, compare a sister to the King of the Ring men's tournament, rather, the Queen's Crown tournament. WrestleMania was reportedly going to be set for two nights in Dallas, and they were discussing options with the stadium, with the city, for how they would pull off such an event, logistics and all that good stuff. Miz was cast on the Dancing with the Stars next season. Gable Stevenson signed a multi-year deal with WWE, and he was going to be staying in college at the University of Minnesota, a big-time amateur wrestler and someone that they are clearly getting behind. A 9/11 doc about the first event being the WWE SmackDown after 9/11 was set for the network. WWE never wanted to be ashamed of patting themselves on the back for doing something like that. Escape the Undertaker, a kind of a interactive horror show, movie, was announced as coming to Netflix. Kevin Owens' contract was revealed that he was going to be expiring in January, and also Sami Zayn's deal was rumored to be up as well. Obviously, that would change a little bit. The news there was some excitement about maybe them going elsewhere, but at least one of them has officially signed, and I think it seems to be the indication that Sami Zayn may have re-signed as well. This was actually pretty big news. Triple H was recovering from what they called a cardiac event. Call that whatever you will, but yeah, heart issues, and he has still not returned. And this will lead into our NXT 2.0 conversation we'll have in just a few minutes. Adam Cole, there was a story that came out that one of the ideas for WWE, the meetings that they had in August, was that Adam Cole would debut in WWE as a manager for Keith Lee and get a brand new name. I think Budge was something like that, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
I'm glad that did happen.
Oh my God. Yeah. That one is so, I can't believe that. I honestly can't believe it, but then at the same time I can believe it, but I really can't believe it.
I know. I know.
Budge or whatever. I just can't. For all the mishaps that this company does, I cannot even fathom them having Adam Cole be Keith Lee's manager and call him Budge or whatever the hell. I just can't. But, I don't know. Maybe it's too ridiculous to make up. It has to be true, but yeah. I don't know.
Extreme Rules. We had Sasha Banks returning. Roman Reigns defeated Demon Balor, and all champions retained at the pay-per-view. Speaking of 9/11, a Zelina Vega match, a tag team match you were supposed to have on the New York-based edition of SmackDown during a 9/11 weekend and Remembrance weekend was actually cut. That's significant because her father passed away in 9/11. It's going to be a big moment. She made up gear for that. And that ended up not happening. Daniel Bryan could have worked the G1. I don't know if this story is actually true. This rumor kind of came out that if WWE had re-signed Daniel Bryan, they would have given him the green light to work the G1 if he wanted to. Daniel Bryan also thanked the WWE in a Players Tribune post and said he wanted to respect WWE's intellectual property. This is related to the Yes chant, and there was a interview he did with Barstool basically saying, I think it was with Barstool, essentially he was saying that WWE asked that the way he phrased it is that they asked him to respect their intellectual property and not use the Yes chant and other things. He kind of walked that back and he said he misspoke and that they actually didn't say he couldn't do this, but essentially it was kind of like, you know, the music and all that stuff and kind of a confusing situation around that about what WWE was asking, what he actually meant by that. Johnny Gargano's contract, news came out that it was expiring in December. The WWE draft was announced for two nights in October. Malik Blade debuted on 205 Live and Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. Everything old is new again, announced for WWE's October return in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I think we'll talk about the Triple H one a little bit more. So I'll put a pin in that because I think that's probably the biggest story. Maybe one of the biggest stories in WWE this entire year is Triple H's, you know, whatever, the cardiac event, and then, you know, what's kind of happened with NXT and what's maybe happened with his place in the company. So we'll talk about that when we talk about NXT 2.0. But otherwise, yeah, not a whole lot else. I mean, I guess, like you said, you know, the Zelina Vega thing, we talk about fan and wrestler service. I mean, this is the opposite of wrestler service. There is, like, you know, you get Zelina Vega ready. She puts on some special gear. She's, you know, going to do this show in New York on 9/11. Honoring her father, and then they just say, hey, sorry, we don't have time. I mean, like, come on, what are you doing, guys? Like, this is just such an easy win. It's just an easy thing to do, and yeah, it just shows how, you know, sometimes how daft this company can be and how, you know, just, you know, tunnel vision this company can be. And it's really a shame. I mean, that was a really tragic moment to see just her emotions after that and just how, you know, hurt she was and just say, man, like, how do you guys do that? Come on. What are you guys doing there? But, yeah, otherwise not a ton else. I would say the Queen's Crown, you know, was at this time, we were all really, really like anticipating what this Queen's Crown was going to be. And I would say that, Josh, I would say that it did not live up to expectations would probably be, the nicest way to say, yeah, a lot of 1 minute, not very good matches or whatever. It did not, live up to our expectations. And then, the Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson stuff, I think was very, very interesting. And I think, like you said, it was kind of mixed up in the wording. And I think a lot of what Brian was probably trying to do is say, hey, I don't want to do these WWE things anymore. And I don't want you guys to do these WWE things to me anymore. But maybe clouded it in a little bit of, hey, I'm doing it to respect WWE's IP. But also I'm doing it because I don't want to be Daniel Bryan anymore. I don't want the yes chance. I want to go back to being Bryan Danielson. I think it was his kind of confusing way to sort of take the heat off of, not necessarily take it, I don't know if he wanted to put it on WWE or just like didn't know the right way to kind of say it, but that's how I always read it, is that he was kind of saying, hey, I don't want to do these. I'm kind of trying to distance myself from this WWE run that I had, while also kind of respecting what WWE did for me and respecting, you know, their character that they had for me, but I want to be something new. And I think the way he did it made it kind of clouded and people were a little confused. It was like, what, so WWE is saying you can't do the yes chance or whatever, where I think it was more of him just saying, I don't want to do the yes chance anymore. I want to move on. I want to kind of start something new for my career. But yeah, it was an interesting month in WWE, but a very perplexing month in a lot of ways. I mean, there was some good, there was some bad, but yeah, I'd say the biggest story is the Triple H thing, but I do want to, you know, hold off and we'll talk about it when we talk about NXT 2.0.
Yeah, let's get through the rest of the month headlines in WWE. John Cena actually admitted that his NFT that came out during SummerSlam, which I think like 38 people bought, it was just he said, quote unquote, it was a catastrophic failure, and give him credit for saying that. He did not toe the company line. He just said we didn't give people what they wanted, and that was that. November UK, WWE announced a November UK 8-show tour. Again, newsworthy because kind of finally getting out there. Anytime these days you're able to go overseas, it's news. MVP had knee surgery. Keith Lee, we talked about him a minute ago, came back, rebooted, so to speak, with a Keith Bearcat Lee. That was added to his name for some reason, kind of the beginning of the end in a lot of ways. Rhea Ripley and Nikki Ash won the women's tag team titles. TLC was rumored to be happening in December. Grand Metalik requested his release. Karrion Kross and Scarlett were engaged. WWE, and I completely forgot about this, WWE and MGM announced they were doing an American Gladiators reboot series with WWE stars taking on
the
role.
I think I missed that. That rules. Yeah. Where's that? I want to see that.
Yeah, I don't know when. I assume it's under development for this year ahead. But yeah, they announced they were going to be doing this with WWE stars playing the role of Gladiator. So how about that? Seth Rollins said he was ready to fight Vince McMahon after his Hell in the Cell match with The Fiend that was completely panned. Yeah, who knows if that was actually the truth, but he was, Rollins is so interesting because he's such a great talent, but it seems his standing with the internet wrestling community really took a dive this year for whatever reason. And there's the character stuff, but then also just people are just like decided that they weren't going to like him anymore for whatever reason. And I know this didn't really help matters, but yeah, he said he was ready to fight Vince McMahon after that terrible match with The Fiend. The Dome Stadium, I don't know what the name of it is now in St. Louis.
It's changed a bunch of times. Yeah,
it used to be the TWA Dome, right? Something like
that. Yeah, I remember it as a TWA Dome. I'm sure it's not because I don't think TWA is in business anymore. It is the Dome at America's Center. So I don't blame you for not knowing the Dome America's Center. Yeah, it was the Edwards Jones is what I remember too. Yes. I remember the TWA and the Edwards Jones. I did not know it was now the Dome at America's Center. So,
right.
I'm not going to call it that. I'm going to call it the Edward Jones or TWA Dome.
We'll call it the TWA Dome. We'll go old school.
Let's do that.
And now they're going to be hosting the 2022 Royal Rumble. Ronda Rousey, former WWE star and UFC star, obviously. She and Travis Brown had their first daughter. UK Stadium was announced. It was going to be Wembley Stadium was a front runner to host the 2022 SummerSlam. We later learned that would not be the case. Sheamus had nose surgery once again, and Alexa Bliss had nasal surgery as well. Thoughts on any of that?
Nothing that really stuck out to me a little bit. I think the Bearcat Lee was like the beginning of the end and the clear, like, all right, this is probably not going to go well here with Keith Lee. And a lot of people saw it as like, all right, cool. Like now they're going to do something with Keith Lee. But I think everybody that astute people knew that, okay, this is just like the last thing that, I mean, they obviously didn't like the way he wrestled. They didn't like his gear. They didn't like his body. They didn't like his name. And it was like, okay, if you think that this is like going to be the last step in Keith Lee's, you know, ascension to superstardom. I think you don't understand Vince McMahon and what he thinks. So to me, it felt like, okay, this is the last try of, hey, let's see if we have anything with this guy. And it was pretty clear that they were done with him pretty quickly, which is ridiculous as well. Like, how do you not? I mean, Keith Lee is another layup as well. Like, what? How do you not? You know, take Keith Lee from what he was on the Indies 3-4 years ago. How do you not just say, hey, just be that guy, just do that, just be your size and do what you do in the ring, and that's enough. That's all we need. But, you know, they're not in the star creation business anymore, so they can't quite figure out what to do. And then, yeah, I think, you know, the dome for Rumble is cool. It just kind of speaks to them, you know, having the confidence that they can do that. And you know, we'll see what ends up being, you know, the end result of the ratings and stuff like that. But I like it because I love the Royal Rumble. It's you know, no matter what I think of WWE in any given year, the Royal Rumble is still my favorite show of the year. Just a fun one to watch with friends. You can bet on it. You can have fun. I mean, just I always liken, you know, the Royal Rumbles to pizza. Like, even a bad Royal Rumble is still pretty damn good. It's yep. still a Royal Rumble. So, like, I will watch any Royal Rumble ever and enjoy it. So still excited to see what happens and love that it's going to be taking part in the Dome as well. And then I enjoy the potential SummerSlam major event thing. So I like their big shows being in these giant, you know, buildings and giant venues. I think it makes it a lot of fun. So yep. It was a cool announcement.
Agreed. Let's flip. We just talked about NXT. Let's flip to NXT 2.0. This was the month that NXT was rebooted. And we mentioned Triple H having the heart issues, cardiac issues. That was not part of the reboot, but actually kind of, or a planned part anyway, but actually kind of worked into this complete overhaul and the beginning of this complete overhaul of what he had built, him and his team had built there for years and years and years. And this had been, again, August had really kind of been the seeds for this, and everything kind of started to grow this month. Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard has learned they were essentially producing the show more hands-on with the promotion, the marketing, the big picture decisions. So while, you know, eventually, you know, Shawn Michaels and some of the other people on staff were taking care of the day-to-day and so on, this was really the vision of McMahon and Pritchard and Kevin Dunn. And essentially we'd see with more talent releases that they essentially want people of the classic WWE style, big and tall, young, attractive, and people that they could host or main event WrestleMania rather. So yeah, we saw more about this, the brand new look, the logo, lots of debuts. We'll kind of go through this whole month and I'll kick it over to you. So the Creed brothers debuted this month. Kushida, it was learned that he tested positive in August, which is why he had to miss a open title weight defense or a open challenge defense of his then cruiserweight title. Again, new names. We had new names for wrestlers like Bronson Rex Steiner and Parker Boudreaux, as a Bron Breakker and Harland would make their debuts. Again, strange names, but yeah, Von Wagner made his debut. There are all types of other debuts as part of this relaunch. I remember that first show was like name after name after name after name of new people and try to figure out who they were and so on. Samoa Joe is part of the relaunch. He relinquished his NXT title due to what he called an undisclosed injury. This was a video, I believe, that also came out on a Sunday. It was kind of a random announcement, and Tommaso Ciampa winning a four-way for the title at that first, the relaunch episode, which I think a lot of people were surprised about because not exactly a young guy, but yet they gave him the title. Pete Dunne signed a three-year deal with WWE NXT to stick around. Johnny Gargano mentioned him a few minutes ago. He and Candice LeRae said they were expecting a boy as their first child. William Regal's son in NXT UK got the new name Charlie Dempsey. And Roderick Strong won the Cruiserweight title from the aforementioned Kushida. Yeah, this was, obviously a transformative month for NXT. The numbers kind of show that it hasn't really made a big difference. In fact, I think they believe they're down from the Triple H era. But the black and gold era is definitely dead. And this is the NXT 2.0 that we have. It is you can tell it's definitely a WWE-ized product versus kind of what it was before. This was, yeah, I don't really know what to say. We talked about this before that, especially with Lance Storm last episode, you know, NXT and the takeovers, they were different and you used to look forward to them, and they kind of scratched that itch of, look, if WWE main roster is going to be this, NXT is going to be for us. This is this. And it really, everything's kind of aligned now and not necessarily in the best way, at least my opinion.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, obviously I liked, you know, Black and Gold era NXT much more than I like NXT 2.0. I think NXT 2.0 has like this somewhat of a charm to it, but it's also like pretty terrible at the same time. Like, it's kind of fun bad at times. It's definitely different. It's definitely different. It's definitely unique. But essentially, it's just Raw with like worse wrestlers, which is not the greatest plan. But at the same time, it was like, I think something that they needed to maybe really get down and think, okay, what is NXT? What are we doing here? Are we developing like we're supposed to? We're investing millions of dollars in this developmental, you know, organization. We're millions of dollars in this performance center, and we're not getting what we want out of it, you know, for better or for worse, or whether that's exactly what they wanted or whatever. They weren't getting what they wanted out of that. And you can blame Vince McMahon for that. You can blame Triple H for that. You can blame the producers. You can blame just the company itself and one hand not talking to the other. But at the end of the day, they're spending millions of dollars for this thing, and it's just not producing what they want. They're not getting, you know, the next generations of stars, you know, out of it. So it's leading to a very interesting thing here with this NXT 2.0, where we're just kind of left with this sort of weird, okay, it's developmental, but it's still on USA, and it kind of feels a lot like a Raw or SmackDown, but it's still kind of developmental. And then you have some holdovers from the old NXT. You know, you have all these new guys that are still, like, you know, have single digit matches that are wrestling on here. It's a very transformative thing that happened in September. And like you said, it all kind of comes together with that Triple H cardiac event. And you know, again, it's so ridiculous that we have to call it this cardiac event. So weird is we haven't seen this guy. Like, is he good? Is he okay? Is he, like, the fact that it's been radio silence, it's so strange. There was times where I was worried. I'm like, is this guy alive? Like, did he die? Is he paralyzed? Like, what's going on? And, like, we've seen, you know, we saw him, like, walking through the new headquarters and stuff. And we know that he's still kind of there and still doing stuff. But what this really said to me, what the September change said to me, is that we, you know, 2-3 years ago, we thought, oh man, when Vince McMahon dies, Triple H is taking over this company. He's assembling his guys. He's got everything ready to go. And hey, this company's going to be in pretty good shape because we've seen what he's done with NXT, and it's a pretty cool product and it's a fun product and all that sort of stuff. And what's happened is when Vince McMahon made the call that we're going to go against AEW, we're going to put NXT on USA, and it's going to compete with AEW, and it's going to kill AEW, and AEW is going to go away because, you know, we think so little of it that we're going to put our developmental, our quote unquote developmental show over against it. And when that failed, when that didn't happen, and when AEW did beat NXT in the ratings, and when AEW just slaughtered NXT in terms of just, you know, buzz and ratings and all that sort of stuff, that Vince McMahon just completely lost faith in what NXT was, and he lost faith in Triple H more than anything. And I don't know that Triple H is getting that back, because I don't know what his role in this company is anymore. I have no idea what the, you know, the trajectory is for this company post Vince McMahon. I have no idea what the hierarchy of this company is post Vince McMahon. And we would have, I mean, for the last, you know, decade, we thought, okay, we know exactly what this is going to be. And Triple H is obviously going to take over the wrestling side of the business when Vince, you know, passes away. And that, I just don't think that's the case anymore. And I don't know what his future in this company is anymore. I have no idea what role Triple H plays anymore. And I think it's a big story that I think a lot of people aren't maybe talking about or aren't focusing on enough, is that this guy who felt for so long like he was that next guy up, even above, you know, Vince's own son, Shane, you know, like, right, felt like he was the next guy up, is a complete non-factor. And NXT got taken away from him and said, you are not doing what I wanted you to do with this thing. I wanted you to do this. I wanted you to do that. And you didn't do it. You failed. You failed me, and I'm taking this away from you, and I'm doing it in my vision and what I want to do. And this is huge. I mean, it's totally transformed how they're signing people. It's totally transformed how WWE is looking at new talent. It's totally changed how WWE is producing developmental. It changes the way that what they're looking for in their developmental as well. And it's just, it's kind of crazy, because, like, the idea of NXT, you know, when it expanded a little bit, was kind of, you know, for better or for worse, it was to develop the next generation of WWE superstars or whatever, but also it was to stamp out competition. Like I said at the top of the show, they were supposed to be, hey, you guys want wrestling? Well, hey, we have wrestling here. You know, we also produce a wrestling show, and that's what NXT, you know, is. If you want to see great wrestlers having great matches, we have that. And then AEW comes along, and they're kind of doing the same thing, and they're doing it a little bit better than NXT does. NXT doesn't stomp out that competition. NXT allows AEW not only to exist, but largely, you know, going head to head allows it to thrive. And that, to WWE's front, is an absolute failure of what NXT was meant to do and what it was supposed to do. And what we saw in September is just, okay, this has been a failure, and we're going to change it. And I would have never in a million years thought it would happen as quick as it did. And it felt like it happened overnight, that NXT just completely changed. Guys were stripped of titles. Guys were released. The TV changed. The announcers changed. The look of the show changed. The logo changed. And the hierarchy of the company changed in seemingly a couple of weeks. And that's, wow, it's one of the biggest stories of 2021. I don't know if enough people are focusing on it. I mean, it is, yeah. It's totally transformed how this company is going to operate now and how this company is going to operate in the future as well.
This will never happen, but I would love if Triple H was like, I'm going to buy Ring of Honor and all the assets and just run it separate out of the WWE. He's like, I'm done with the company. I'm going to just do this. And I think it'd be fun for him to have his own kind of like wrestling group join, which he did with NXT. But I think it'd be just kind of fun for him to be like, because you know, like, he doesn't, in my heart of hearts, he doesn't like what he sees now. He knows, like, he came up through, I mean, he was trained by Killer Kowalski. Like, he came up old school, and like, he knows what pro wrestling should be. And I think it's probably why he loved NXT so much, is that's what he was allowed to do. It'd be nice to see him run a wrestling company again and do it kind of outside the WWE sphere. So he could run it how he would run it. It'll never happen unless he, like, you know, he and Stephanie got divorced. He was like excommunicated from the family or something like that. But a chance to actually see him just kind of get involved in the product anymore, as much as, you know, he's had this real kind of interesting career where he was so disliked when he was in the ring because there was so much of the political backstage bullshit. But, you know, when he got NXT, it's like he got embraced and welcomed again. And I think for, you know, a lot of good reason. And now he's kind of like in this limbo of like, you know, what's he going to do? I'd love to see him just run a group again, just to see kind of what he can do. A no pressure group, but you know, that'll never happen, obviously. But yeah, what is his role? I don't, kind of interesting, interesting statement. You're right. So it's a big story that I don't think a lot of people have talked that much about.
Yeah, and largely, like, you know, I'm with you that I think he's a great wrestling mind. I think the problem is, and like a lot of bookers are this way too, and he's, you know, definitely a victim of this, or you know, he kind of does it to himself, is that when you book yourself or you have a part in booking yourself, like, you can't help it. You're like, well, I should just beat everybody and win everything. And it's like, okay, yeah, I mean, all right. But then when we saw when he took himself away from the ring and he divorced himself from, you know, being a part of it, then he was able to really kind of let those wrestling smarts go. I mean, this is a guy who basically cosplayed Harley Race for like 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, Of course we know that he loves like old school wrestling and gets old school wrestling. And we saw that a little bit with NXT. And I think a lot of the things that hurt NXT were not really his fault, because we saw in the early stages of you know, this reformed NXT is that they were developing stars. They were getting guys ready. They were getting Sami Zayn ready and Kevin Owens ready and numerous other guys ready to go. Neville and they were getting these guys, you know, ready for the main roster. Shinsuke Nakamura to a lesser extent. I mean, obviously there's not a whole lot you need to do with Shinsuke Nakamura, but still they were doing that. And then what kind of changed everything is when NXT got too successful and they said, all right, now we're going to go on the road. Now you got a tour. And then they weren't taking guys away from the company. And then it sort of lost what it was. And then it just became a third brand. And I think when that happened, you started to get this weird thing where, like, okay, we're just this third brand that's, you know, signing top indie stars and focusing on guys, but nobody's leaving. No one's really getting cycled out. What, you know, what are we doing here? And then it became like, you know, Vince McMahon and WWE saying, well, you're not developing the next stars for us. And it's like, well, I mean, yeah, what do you want me to do? You want me to, you know, draw and go on the road and sell out basketball arenas, but then I also need to develop stars in the way you want. And what do you want? And then I am developing guys. Then you bring them up to the main roster and change everything about them. And it just was a clear indication that they had no idea. Like, one hand had no idea what the other hand was doing, or just weren't working in unison. And it's probably better now that they are working in unison, but like the success of that moving forward with NXT 2.0, who knows? I mean, who knows what that's going to be? But yeah, it really is an unfortunate end to NXT, which I thought was a really, really cool product and a really cool brand for many, many years. And now I'm just, it's a tough watch these days, and it's probably working better for the company itself. But, you know, it's very, very strange. But yeah, this is the biggest, to me, honestly, maybe the biggest story in 2021 is Triple H and what his future is in the company. And I feel like people are just kind of forgot about it because he's been so out of sight, out of mind.
Yep. Let's go through, we'll combine Ring of Honor and Impact. Ring of Honor, it seems so lame duck to talk about, but these things happen during the month. Kind of a, foreshadowing of the end. Roosh was announced he was going to be out the rest of 2021 as he recovered from, I believe it was knee surgery, but something.
very conspicuous knee surgery, which, you know what, hey, maybe he's got a tough knee, maybe he has surgery, but yeah. Very, sorry, I will not be able to drop the title. I am getting knee surgery. Bye. Don't call me. I'll call you.
Right. Thing, so. Roxy, Miranda Lees, Maxine Paler, and Trisha Dora signed deals with the company. PCO announced he was going to be done with the company as his contract expired. Dragon Lee and Kenny King won the ROH tag team titles on weekly TV as they defeated Homicide and Chris Dickinson. At Death Before Dishonor, Alex Zane won the Honor Rumble, he formerly of NXT. Roxy won the women's title, the rebranded, revived, rejuvenated women's title. And then all their champions, including Bandido, retained at that event. And then Psycho Clown has announced he is going to be making his ROH debut at some point soon. Flip to Impact Wrestling. Great news. Don West's cancer was announced to be in remission. Knockouts Knockdown, an all women's event, was announced for October, and there was going to be a title eliminator tournament on that show. And Tommy Dreamer suspended as a result of comments that he made on the Plane Ride from Hell edition of Dark Side of the Ring, which we'll talk about in just a minute. At Victory Road, Christian Cage defended the Impact World title against Ace Austin. And then shortly after, actually right after, Josh Alexander relinquished his X Division title, which he just had defended on the show against Chris Sabin, for something called Option C, which I had never heard of in my life, and I don't know if they just made it up for the show or not, but regardless, apparently Option C, you can relinquish your title in exchange for a world title shot, which he did. We learned that would be at Bound for Glory the following month, and then all other champions retained at that show. Sami Callihan suffered a broken ankle at the Impact TV tapings the next day, and that would keep him out for a considerable amount of time, and also would keep him out of some planned tag team matches with old tag team partner John Moxley that were going to be announced for some indies, or happening at some indies, rather. Christopher Daniels returned the company after a long absence to extend this strange end to the AEW Impact relationship. Bound for Glory taking shape, as I mentioned, Christian versus Josh Alexander, and also Mickey James taking on then Knockouts champion Deonna Purrazzo, and also, for some reason, in fact, announced the Digital Media Championship to be defended on YouTube, Impact Plus, and other things like that. Thoughts about any of ROH and Impact's month?
Yeah, ROH, like you said, it seems so weird to be like, I think this is going to be a good move for them, knowing what was ahead. I think the most tragic thing of Ring of Honor's, you know, final few days are the fact that, like, these people that got signed, particularly Roxy, who finally got her big moment and got her big spot, wins the title and, like, wins the tournament and signs a new deal. And then they're like, oh, hey, thanks. Congratulations on winning the title. But we're going, you know, on hiatus. So bye. And so that very disappointing there. But it started to feel weird at the end of the year here. And this is probably the first moment where it started to kind of feel like, okay, Ring of Honor, you know, the Roosh being out was something that was like, okay, that's kind of strange, but yeah, it's Roosh. Maybe he's just going to take off for a little bit. PCO leaving, it was kind of like, okay, but it was like, wow, these are two of like their biggest guys that they've been, you know, doing a lot of stuff with over the last couple of years. And they're just kind of gone and done and moving on. But then at the same time, they were signing new people. It felt like they, you know, Alex Zane comes back and stuff. So there was enough to like look at and say, all right, yeah. Okay. This company is still doing okay. They're maybe just, you know, some of their higher end contracts and the higher end people are getting moved away, and then they're bringing in some lower end contracts, whatever, that's fine, you know, not knowing what was ahead down the line. And then, you know, Impact, it was a very, very troubling month for them in September, because it was the end of the AEW relationship, and we've seen that really, or the end of like the working agreement or whatever, what was going on now, maybe the relationship is still alive or whatever, but you felt like, oh man, once like Kenny's away from this TV, like what's next down the line for Impact? What are they going to do? And this is kind of the first month where it felt like they really didn't have that same momentum, and it didn't really feel like they were must watch TV, even though they had, you know, largely been worth watching for a little bit during the, you know, the AEW run or with Kenny in there and guys coming in and out. But yeah, you had the Alexander, you know, relinquishing the title, and that felt like a really cool moment, because, you know, you felt like, okay, this is going to happen. Alexander's going to win the title, and he's well deserved. But Bound for Glory didn't feel like it was really on the level of past Bound for Glories. You know, the Callahan injury definitely sucked, and then Tommy Dreamer, who felt so vital to that show, for better or for worse, you know, him getting suspended felt like just another blow to Impact. But yeah, this is the month where it felt like Impact kind of receded back into kind of Impact in September, and what we've seen that kind of hold true for the rest of the year, where they just have not been, you know, really newsworthy or watchable, you know, for better or for worse since then. So
let's go to Japan, and a few items here. Will Ospreay testing positive for COVID-19, and later was announced that he and a mystery partner were going to be appearing at Autumn Attack. Wrestle Kingdom 16, was set for three nights, not just two nights, three nights in 2022. That was announced. Toriano won the King of Pro Wrestling title. The G1 field was announced, and later on during the month, Tetsuya Naito was out due to a knee injury, so keep him out of the tournament, a big blow there. El Desperado and Kanemaru won the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles, once again defeating Ishimori and ELP El Fantasmo. Jake Atlas, Alex Zane, Jonathan Gresham, and Chris Bay were added to the latest run of Strong tapings. They announced that the Best of the Super Juniors and also the World Tag League were going to be happening concurrently at the same time. Tanahashi and Ishii were going to be appearing at the Strong tapings as well. And John Moxley was out of the Battle in the Valley show in San Jose, and Will Ospreay, the aforementioned Will Ospreay, was added instead. I mentioned on the show, I'm not a big Japan watcher, but I assume you are, or at least pretty familiar. Thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, it was an interesting month. Obviously, with the Wrestle Kingdom getting announced as three nights was a little bit of a, oh boy, do we really need three nights of Clap Crowd Wrestle Kingdom? And what we've seen is that two of the nights will be a true Wrestle Kingdom, quote-unquote true Wrestle Kingdom, obviously, still with the Clap Crowds in the Tokyo Dome. And then the third night is going to be kind of a NOAH New Japan joint show. So at the time, we didn't know that, and we were thinking, man, three nights of Wrestle Kingdom? That seems like a lot. Like, you guys need that much? But and it ended up working out, I would say, okay. Otherwise, though, it was an uneven, you know, month in some ways, because Will Ospreay testing positive and pretty much not coming back to Japan was definitely going to be a big blow. The G1 got decimated pretty early with Naito going out. But what I would say more than anything is it was cool that New Japan of America, I think this was the month where they really got back on track, because they were like, all right, look, like, the pandemic is we're probably in the long haul for this thing, at least for the rest of the year. So let's build strong. And I think they did a very good job of building strong, bringing in guys like an Alex Zhang, having guys like Gresham and Bay, like you mentioned, appear, having Tanahashi and Ishii appear when they were in America, having Will Ospreay, you know, do the Battle of the Valley. You know, I think Battle in the Valley in general, you know, announcing a lot of stuff for that made it really good. So from the standpoint of, like, domestically, it was not a great month for Japan in September with, you know, many, you know, bad things happening, the G1 being kind of ho-hum or whatever. But for the most part, what was really cool, though, was I thought New Japan Strong had, for lack of a better term, its strongest month, and really felt like it was going to be a player for the rest of the year. And I think New Japan Strong has been very, very good. And it really gives me hope that when fans can come back and make noise again in Japan, and when they can, you know, travel can open up a little bit, that they're building a nice little stable of people in New Japan Strong, and they can bring those people in to New Japan proper and have truly great matches and truly great shows again. But unfortunately, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer for that to happen. So.
And let's flip to the junk drawer. This is everything else that happened during the month in various organizations. We've talked about a lot, or allude to it a lot here. The Plane Ride from Hell episode of Dark Side of the Ring debuted. And boy, the fallout from this, I think of any show that they've had, this was arguably the biggest in terms of news. I mean, there's obviously talk value. You mentioned about the Owen one, the Owen Hart one. There was the Brian Pillman one. There's a lot of talk about that. But this was, unlike any we had seen, because it was revealed on the show, or at least discussed, that Ric Flair had exposed himself to a flight attendant. And just this whole plane ride episode, this did not make anyone look good. Tommy Dreamer was on the episode, essentially kind of defending Flair, and just did not come off well. And this had a lot of fallout for a lot of reasons. There was an ad campaign with Ric Flair that was suspended, the National Car Shield ad or something like that, that was suspended as a result, and he lost that. He had to make multiple statements basically denouncing sexual abuse, and he also denied that he did any of this. He did say he did the, can't believe I'm saying this, the helicopter move that was discussed. He said he had done that in the past, but he said he did not do it on this plane ride and what have you. Again, we mentioned Dreamer being suspended both from Impact. He was also suspended temporarily from Busted Open Radio as well. So there was that whole thing. There was talk about Flair going to AEW. That died on the vine due to all this. So not good. No one really looked good here at all. And it was just, they basically went through the whole thing. I don't know much more I can say about it, but this was, I guess we'll just start here and then I'll kind of go through the rest of the list. This was as eventful a non wrestling in-ring product, a wrestling show focused on a non-in-ring product as there was throughout the entire year.
It really was. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, the Dark Sides of the Ring, you know, they're meant to expose, you know, kind of the seedy parts of wrestling. And in some cases, you know, some episodes can end up having like a good story or a decent, like the Nick Gage episode, I think is one that I mentioned, the Owen Hart episode one, where you're like, all right, like, yeah, it gets down to like how awful the wrestling business can be. But at the end of the day, there's like a happy story at the end of this. This one was not that. This was like, this is how CD wrestling is. And then the result of it was that everybody just kind of like, eh, yeah, that's what happens. That's wrestlers. And it's like, oh God, like, that's not what you really like. It's one thing to say like, oh yeah, that was, you know, that was something that used to get done, but thankfully, like, we've learned and we've moved on and we don't do it anymore. That was not the tenor of this show. This tenor was like, eh, it happens. You know, that's what you do. And it's like, oh no, that's not what you do. Like, it's, yeah. It was, yeah, it was pretty wild. And yeah, the end result of it, I'm actually surprised it's died down as much as it has. And I guess I don't know. It depends. Like, depending on what we thought Flair was going to do and if Flair was going to get into AEW, whether he was going to be a big deal, possibly it is a little bit bigger than we thought it was. But no, this was one where it really, it's all that dark side of the ring, all the negativity of dark side of the ring. This is kind of it. And I mean that in like, not to, you know, criticize those guys, because they're just telling their story. They're just doing what they're doing. But like, you know, it shows like sometimes this business is just as awful as it appears on its face. And there isn't a good story out of it. You know what I mean? And and that was one where it was just brutal to watch. And then the aftermath was equally brutal as well. And it just, yeah, there was no happy ending, no good story from it. Just an awful, awful show.
Yeah, I think that some of the worst part of it was the Twitter is terrible anyway, but just fans kind of like finding, taking issue with the stewardess and being like, oh, she was arrested later on because she stole some jewelry or something like that. I'm like, you guys are completely missing. It doesn't excuse
that doesn't mean
one
you can't
thing.
Be sexually assaulted Jesus. Because you committed a crime later in life. Yeah. It was pretty awful. Yeah. And it was one, in one hand, it was kind of interesting because like, I mean, I sort of knew, I mean, it's Ric Flair. I mean, how do you like, you know what I mean? And I was kind of surprised that people were like, oh my God, I didn't expect this out of Ric Flair. And I'm like, what are you talking about? But like, then I kind of had to catch myself and being like, all right, well, look, yeah, that's, you know, I come from a standpoint of like thinking this business is kind of crappy and awful and terrible, you know, and being aware of that and knowing that. But there were a lot of people that maybe didn't, you know, quite know just how bad it was and didn't quite know quite the reputation of some of these people. So, you know, in one sense, it's good that these episodes exist and it's good that they're telling these stories, because there are a lot of people that don't know this stuff or don't, you know, maybe look on the bright side and say, oh, I didn't know wrestling was as bad as it was. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it really is. And mm-hmm. you hope that it's improved and you hope that things have gotten better and will get better in the future. But yeah, this is an episode where you really realize that, oh man, there's some systemic issues still in pro wrestling, and it's going to take a long, long, long time for some of that stuff to really, really go away or ever get fixed.
Yeah, and to your point, I remember this came out afterwards. Roy Karp, who did the ESPN documentary on Ric Flair, which talked about the helicopter stuff, exposing himself, what have you. There was like no blowback from that at all.
No, it was done as comedy. It was like they did it as a cartoon. They're like, ha ha, he twirled his, you know, yeah, like a helicopter. And it's like, ha ha ha, all right, now let's tell the story of Ric Flair. It was like a central part of the story to get you ready for the rest of the Ric Flair story, this joke about what he did on this plane. And yeah, it was very, very interesting that it was like, wait, he like definitely told everybody that he did this. Everybody's well aware of this, but maybe it took, I think it done in a very serious, and one thing that I think was key with the dark side is getting her perspective as well.
Yes.
That yeah. She's like, no, I didn't like this. It wasn't funny. Like, I didn't have fun with this, you know. And that's where, like, you know, all the other stories were just from Ric Flair or the wrestler standpoint saying, oh, it's Ric Flair, whatever. And this was like, no, look, there's another side of this story. And there's this woman who did not feel that this was funny and that felt that this was something that was appropriate at all. And you needed that. And that to Darkseid's credit, they told both ends of that story. And that was kind of the result of it.
True. Let's go through the rest of the junk drawer here. Braun Strowman was booked to his first post-WWE match/appearance with whatever EC3's Free the Narrative thing is he's doing. That hasn't really connected with me at all. Alexander Hammerstone versus Jacob Fatu. The title versus title match MLW had been building up for quite some time was announced for October's Fightland in Philadelphia. Daphne, longtime WCW member and pro wrestler, died at 46 due to suicide. Ryan Sakota also passed away during the month. And there was a lot of outpouring of sadness for both of their passings. John Moxley defeated Matt Cardona, having quite a year, for the GCW title. A Nick Gage death match was up next for Moxley, and then Mick Foley was going to present the title at that GCW event. I believe it's set for October, if I remember right. MLW announced they're returning in September with Fusion Alpha. Why they decided to change the name of Fusion to Fusion Alpha, I have no idea. MLW also announced their Uppercut field, where in that tournament was coming back, obviously. And in the field was announced Bobby Fish, Lee Moriarty, Davey Richard, and Tom Lawler. So yeah, Fish wrestled for AEW and MLW in the same week on TV. That was kind of interesting when those first rolled out. Renee Paquette and Misha Tate were starting a Sirius XM show. Al Snow saved a child from a ocean riptide. So following up, Al Snow is just always in the news for random stuff. Jake Atlas said he was stepping away for pro wrestling. This was kind of one of the more heartbreaking stories to read. If you you heard his interview he did with Denise Salcedo, who does some work for our website, and just kind of his issues he had in NXT, how they really didn't understand how to use a gay character. They didn't really understand. They told him to kind of not be less gay, but the smiling could be interpreted one way, and just all these mixed messages, you guys, just really terrible.
Yeah,
how he got treated there. And yeah, he announced that he was gonna start doing some stuff with Ring of Honor. He worked for at that Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view and looked to get hurt, just kind of really wasn't with it, and said he was gonna step away at pro wrestling possibly forever. So we'll see what happens with him. But yeah, definitely not a great situation for Jake Atlas in NXT, and good that he was out of there, but obviously kind of, recovering mentally from just a strange time there overall. NWA announced that they were going to turn for a pay-per-view with By Any Means Necessary in October. Again, speaking of GCW, Minoru Suzuki versus Nick Gage was announced for an October GCW event. Superstar Billy Graham was hospitalized with heart issues. Going to PWG, they were back. Brody King and Malakai Black won the PWG tag team titles. And there was also the story about a transgender fan being attacked at the same show. So they had to make a statement on that. And then Tony Storm and Juice Robinson were engaged. Robinson, obviously, with New Japan, and Tony Storm with WWE. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, the Daphne news, that one was pretty awful. I remember that night somebody tweeted out something like, hey, look what Daphne's doing on Twitter. I forget what the wording was, but it wasn't like what I thought it was. And I was just like, okay. And for some reason, I clicked it and I watched like 2 seconds of the video and was like, oh, this is not good at all. And I clicked away and then kind of watching it, follow as the night went on, and then, waking up to the story that what our worst fears were realized and she did pass away was pretty awful. That was a terrible, terrible story. And yeah, there was some real bad stuff this month as well. Like you mentioned the Jake Atlas thing, a guy who had just all the love for wrestling and just couldn't wait and felt like he had all the potential in the world. And, a couple years later now he's just like, I'm done. I don't ever want to wrestle again. It sucks. Yeah. It really does suck. But, yeah, there was some interesting stuff. I think GCW, I think that was an important month for them in September. And I tweeted this out at the time as well, that Mick Foley coming in and giving his stamp of approval is something that I thought more people should have talked about, because he doesn't usually attach himself to things that he doesn't think. Like he's a very, he's a very honest guy. Like Mick Foley, when he likes something, he lets you know. When he hates something, he lets you know. You know what I mean? Like, the early TNA run, because people always bring up, oh, what about TNA? Like when he started in TNA, he read the quotes from this guy. Like he thought, I'm coming here to help this company, and we're really going to challenge, and we're really going to do some great things, and we're really going to do some awesome stuff. And you felt that in his work, and you felt that in the way he presented himself on TNA television. And then you look at the end of the TNA run and his public comments of like, yeah, I don't know. Like he let you know that he thought this company sucked, and he was really disappointed that it wasn't, what he thought it was going to be. And he felt very disappointed by how it ended there. And his enthusiasm for GCW was very evident that night. And he was on commentary and he couldn't say enough great things about them. And I thought that stamp of approval was really, really something to keep an eye on, of saying, hey, this is a guy who was saying, hey, this company is a thing. This company is a thing. And I like this. And I'm giving my stamp of approval to it. I thought it was really, really important. And he did that many, many years prior with Ring of Honor as well, doing stuff with Ring of Honor in 2004 and 2005 or whatever, really kind of gave them a stamp of approval that I think really stood out. So I thought that was a very, very prominent thing for Mick Foley to give that, the thumbs up to GCW. But yeah, other than that, just kind of an up and down month with some interesting stuff there with the Free the Narrative thing, which I don't really quite know what it is or who would watch it. But hey, you know what? It has the Titan in it, so I guess that's a thing. But yeah, I'm not sure. I'm still not sure what that is. And the Hammerstone Fatu Fightland thing felt like a really big deal at the time, but in hindsight, it wasn't really that big of a thing either with MLW. So
yep, I agree. Well, I've been very generous with your time, Mr. Rich, and before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug Voice of Wrestling, all the good stuff you guys are doing there. Just anything you want to plug, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I'll just plug voicesofwrestling.com. We're doing some really, really good stuff on that website these days. Previews, reviews of all major shows, as well as our podcast network, a very extensive podcast network with a lot of podcasts covering all the world of wrestling. So we have the flagship podcast, which I host. We talk about all the latest news and notes in pro wrestling. We also have a Patreon component to that as well. Flagshippatreon.com is how you can subscribe there. We have retro shows and instant reactions to major shows and all that sort of stuff up there at flagshippatreon.com. But in addition to the podcast network, we have a wrestling trivia game show. We have a show about the music of pro wrestling. We have shows that cover, you know, singular promotions. We have like a New Japan show called the Super J Cast. We have a show that covers Dragon Gate called Open the Voice Gate. We have Wrestling Omakase, which covers all of Japanese wrestling. We have Shake Them Ropes, which covers, you know, major American pro wrestling as well. I mean, just a lot of really good stuff on that network. And we're actually adding some additional shows over the next month or so as well. Can't reveal all those just yet. We're still in the works of some of those, but it is definitely one to subscribe to, and you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Just look up for the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. It's all on there. And then, yeah, voicesofwrestling.com, and that's how you can do it. Also, we have a Discord that's got really cool as well. A lot of really great wrestling discussion going on there constantly. voicesofwrestling.com/Discord is how you can subscribe to that and join the discussion. But yeah, thank you, Josh, for having me on here. It was a blast.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And you guys do, I've said this before, you guys do great work over there, and it's different, which is good. I think that's needed. And especially around like Hall of Fame, Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame season, you guys do a great job of just throwing out different candidates in discussion. I think it's important to kind of have that outside the observer sphere, because that's, you know, what Hall of Fame discussion should be. It shouldn't be influenced by the governing body, so to speak. And you guys have always done a great job of that. And just general discussion as well.
Thank you.
I think that's really good. I put you guys over before and continue to do so. Great work and podcasts and all that stuff. Keep it going there. And yeah, so we're done with September. A lot of stuff happened. And we'll talk. I'm sure we'll talk next year, Rich, and a lot more things will have happened as well. I guarantee that. Some things will definitely
happen. Things will happen. Yes, I think my prediction for 2022, things will occur. So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully good things. Hopefully more good things than bad things. So
yeah, exactly. I would agree. Rich, thanks so much. All right. Big thanks to Rich Krejci for stopping by. Go a little bit long there, 90 minutes, but it was well worth it. All types of stuff to talk about. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that. Let us know on Twitter at the Voice of Wrestling Twitter, and then also mine as well, JOSHNASON, or the Observer website, whatever Twitter handle, whatever you want to do, let us know. Be certainly happy to hear those thoughts. And let's see, what else? So we're looking to wrap up the year in review series this week, at least for October and November in pro wrestling. I'm going to wait probably till the weekend to do December in case anything happens at the last day, last possible second, which you never know with day one, the pay-per-view coming up on January 1st. So we'll release that probably on Monday. That is the goal. And then Paul and I are going to work on recording the finale for the MMA Year in Review series. And that will go up, I would assume, maybe on Tuesday, depending on Paul's schedule for next week. We'll have to wrap that up with October, November, December. Again, lots of things happen on the last day of the month. You never know. So yeah, that's why we're doing it that way, as we always do. And I think we're good. Been with you for an hour and a half, so let you go. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. Greatly appreciate the time you spent with me or any of the great podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. And until next time, which will probably be in a day or so, insert catchphrase here.